And gentlemen, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
I can turn on that mic. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagmann Report. It is Monday, October 2nd, 2017, and we're coming to you with a very heavy heart, of course, in the wake of the mass shooting incident that took place in Las Vegas late last night, early this morning, East Coast time. It began about 10 p.m. West Coast time. Local time, and about 1 o'clock in the morning on the East Coast time, I was notified of this about 35 minutes after one, and followed it since that time. And as I said in my morning show, I declined and to be on coast to coast at 3 o'clock this morning simply because at this time, and this, I'd like to combine my opening statement or an opening statement with this, speaking on behalf of not just myself, but all of the crew. That includes Joe, and that includes John Robertson, our program director and producer, Eric the Tech, Jackie, and of course everyone here at the Hagmann Report Studios. Of course, our prayers go out to the people and their families who were victims of this unspeakable act of terror, and that's exactly what it is, terror. It is by the grace of God that one of our own family members did not attend this concert, and we're scheduled to, but nonetheless, that does not lessen the impact from this. Excuse me, but here's what I would like to say. And I think I speak on behalf of the entire Hagmann Report team in saying this. Most people tend to lose their critical thinking skills in the wake of or response to a traumatic incident like this. We realize, given our positions in reporting the news and bringing the news to you, in our capacity as investigative reporters and as investigators by profession and reporting to you, that we've got a responsibility, a very serious responsibility, not to be first, but to be correct with the information. Those people who are looking for nuggets of information, whether it be on our my personal Twitter feed or my Facebook page or even my own website or the Hagmann Report, outside of the open source information, will not find it. And there's a reason for that. The reiteration of the same open source information is pointless. It does nothing but confirms, reconfirms, and help shape a narrative that may or may not be true. We aren't going to fall into a fallacy trap of repeating and restating a predetermined narrative, if that's what this might be, or one that is shaped by knee-jerk reactions as opposed to analysis of the facts. We are collecting information from all available sources, open sources, and proprietary sources. And again, being first is not as important as being correct. You rely upon us to be correct, and that is what we intend to be. I began following, as I mentioned, the reports at about 1:35 Eastern time this morning, which is about the time that it's about 15 minutes following the first, after the last shot, I suppose. And monitored here EMS channels for Las Vegas as well as Clark County. Now, I personally, and we collectively, will have much more to say about this event in the days ahead. We as a team, as well as me personally. Now, what I can say with comfortable authority and experience is that the initial facts, even the facts that are given hours and maybe even a day out, are often wrong. One of the things, however, that I believe strongly, given the days in which we live, the era in which we live, is that we must closely monitor the collateral consequences of the event, as close, if not closer, as the event itself. We have private law enforcement sources, too, to be exact, who are providing me with information. I've been asked to hold the information until a specific time. It's not earth-shaking information. It's information that speaks to perhaps motive, intent, and also corrects some facts or information that's being stated as fact out there in the mainstream media. By the way, I intend to honor those requests, both of them. I think that everyone will agree that something very big has changed in this country in the last 15 or 20 years, and even in the last 12 months. I believe that we are at the cusp of a war, the Civil War, an era like no other. And I would urge everyone to maintain their critical thinking skills, to question everything that they hear and see. Do not make snap judgments. Do not be led by reflexive emotional responses to a traumatic incident. We will not, and I say that because you depend on us, and we intend to keep our mandate of accuracy and responsibility in reporting to you. And again, our hearts go out to the victims, and I personally don't believe that things are the way that they appear to be at this moment. At least, you turn on any number of channels on the television, on the radio, and it's the same thing. Same information. And you have to ask yourself, you know, is this true? And if so, what does this mean in the larger sense? We have to look at the larger picture. And I mentioned my morning program because the exploitation of this event will be severe. I guarantee you. And I talked about that. And I bring it to the guests that we've had on, courtesy of WorldNet Daily, WND, such as Charles Sasser, William Murray, David Capellian, who are looking at the larger picture on this, of our direction, of this country. And now, over the next couple of days and throughout the week, we will have people, in fact, even tonight, at the bottom of the second hour, we're going to have federal firearms instructor Keith Hansen, a friend of the show, a friend of ours, come on to talk about this incident, his view on things, his assessment on things. We'll have Jack Posobiec weigh in and others. But we're not going to be definitive in terms of our findings until our investigation has been complete, because again, you depend on us for accuracy and you rely upon us for the truth, wherever it might lead. And that's my opening statement.
Yeah, it definitely was a a crazy evening and morning this today as we awoke to the news, or before last night, went to bed, saw the news of what had happened. At first, the incident appeared, I think one of the first reports that was out there was 2 dead, 27 injured. And then this morning, it continued to increase. The totals right now, 59 dead, 527 injured at Vegas concert. The man that they have said is the gunman, Stephen Paddock, has no criminal history. He lives just 80 miles northeast of Las Vegas, Nevada, in a retirement community at a home valued at $363,000. He's a retired accountant. His brother was interviewed, who lives in Florida, and said that at last time he moved, helped Paddock move, that there were no machine guns, that he did not own any. But then again, you know, we don't know, we don't have the whole story. They're saying that there's no political or religious motivations at this point. And there are more questions than answers here. We just don't know what happened, and we can't jump to conclusions or speculate. As you said, Dad, it's just, it's unfortunate that these things continue to happen. It has been a long time since we've seen a mass shooting. One of the last ones was at the Orlando Pulse nightclub in 49. June of 2016, where 49 were killed, 57 injured, which then was what they say the deadliest modern mass shooting. Now this, from yesterday, has become the deadliest mass shooting in American history. And when they say deadliest mass shooting in American history, I believe they mean somebody with a gun attacking an innocent crowd or a group of people, because obviously...
To take it in the context right. In which it was really intended, at least in that case.
No, I know.
You know, now, there are some and I will say this, there are some comparisons here to some historical events, which I find very interesting.
The 100-year anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution?
That, and then there's the Maiden Square event, and some other things that one can compare this to, but again, following this for the last how many hours? I don't know, however many hours.
Almost 24.
Okay. And I see people talking. Well, there's two shooters. There was a shooter from the fourth floor. Look at this video. Look at that video. I understand all of this. My statement is this. Just calm down for a minute, all right? Because I understand, and Joe, there's, okay, I'll just come around and say this. I don't believe that we're getting, especially based on the information I've gotten from law enforcement sources, I don't believe we're getting the whole truth here. But that doesn't mean there's this massive conspiracy. It means that you've got to let the fog of the initial investigation clear and talk to people who know exactly what they're talking about before you make any definitive statements about a second shooter, about a shooter from the lower floors, about the muzzle flashes, about the, you know, where this came from, where that came from. The analysis has to be precise, especially when you're, for sure, if you weren't there, but when you're dealing with the sources that were there or are involved in the investigation. To protect them, we have to be very, very particular in what we report. And I'm tired. I'm so tired of this dominating the news, not because it's not newsworthy, but because the reiteration of what they believe to be the facts is nothing more than reinforcing a narrative that may or may not be true.
Right. No, you're right. And whether there was one or two shooters or, you know, that's yet to be seen. But one thing from the footage I watched is that the people who did not initially panic, for instance, there was a report of a man giving the finger to the general direction of where the shots were coming from. And then you had people pointing all up into the same area. So it looked like people on the ground had a basic idea of where the shots were coming from and that they were coming from an elevated position. But this is the one story that really, gets under my skin when we're talking about this. Las Vegas shooting. You're all going to die. Shock warning 45 minutes before the attack. Now, apparently, this was from his girlfriend, acquaintance.
Well, now, see, again, this is, okay,
Go ahead. But we haven't talked all day about this, so.
But this, okay, his girlfriend, who has been identified already, who left her. At first, it was reported to be a players club, a platinum players club in the room of the hotel. And that's how she was identified so quickly, Mary Lou Danley, the Asian, 4'11" Asian woman that they were looking for at the time of my morning show. it was thought that she was the one because she's Asian, and she was the onlookers there, or the people that were witnessed, that said there was a Hispanic woman.
Mm-hmm.
Until you are able to verify the authenticity of those statements through independent investigation, we have to take that with a grain of salt. However, now, if you think back, compare, for example, here's what I don't want to happen. I don't want to have happen. Remember the RFK assassination in the Ambassador Hotel, the woman in the pink polka dot dress and the two, or the one, specifically the one woman sitting on the stairs when the woman in the polka dot, or the couple, including the one in the polka dot dress, ran by that woman. The witness had informed the police and was interviewed by the special unit senator with the Robert Kennedy assassination, and was browbeat into submission and into silence based on her observations. One thing we want to do is we want to preserve the integrity of the evidence and verify the authenticity of the statements. So that's, again, because you depend on us to do that. Until we get that independently verified, all we can say is this is anecdotal evidence that's not been independently verified. But go ahead with that. Because many people don't know about
this. The article goes on to say there is no confirmation, no confirmed police link to the eyewitness's claim, but part of the claim is that she was with a man, not the person identified as the shooter, and was removed from the event by security after she was messing with people, pushing her way to the front, saying you were all going to die. So we might see subsequent reports coming out and saying, yes, this did happen, and there was somebody who made these threats, you know, minutes before the shooting happened. Either way, it doesn't change the fact that this is just a horrible tragedy.
Right, and there will be more deaths attributed to this.
Oh, yeah.
There will be and it amazes me as well. This did not happen with extreme planning. There was a lot of planning that went in. That I can say for sure. And I spoke with the one police officer today. This was planned for a long time. Now, when I say a long time, what does that mean? Does that mean months and months? Perhaps, but at least over the course of several days. And it was done, and the number of weapons, which I don't have a good handle on, because that crime scene was immediately, the room was immediately sealed off. There's anywhere between 10 to 19 long weapons. There's talk of, a number of, one thing for sure, just based on the audio, is that this was at least one automatic weapon. Whether it was illegally obtained or modified, it was an automatic weapon. And you're looking at, I believe, 11 rounds per second, depending on the caliber, I think 7.62 by 5.39.
And Keith will talk about this.
Right.
Because he's an expert in firearms. And that's one of the things about the videos that one of the reasons why many people are saying that there's two shooters is because not only from the gunfire from the automatic weapons, but from the echo that it created in the area where the shooting took place. And people are saying just from the sound of the shooting, it sounds like more than one person is shooting at the time.
It sounded almost like different calibers at different times, however. Now, that could just be, again, an artifact of the audio.
Right. We need forensic technicians to go over the audio and to see they can determine exactly what's going on in the audio better than any of us can sitting here listening to it.
But one thing I believe, it did not happen exactly or precisely the way they said it happened. Now, does that mean that there's this huge conspiracy? No, that means that initial information is often wrong. As simple as that. And you never go, and that's why I refuse to really talk about it until all of the facts, at least the open source information, is in. Then we compare it to the proprietary information we have. I mean, look, as investigators, we have access to proprietary databases. We could tell you all about Stephen Paddock. We could tell you all about the other individual that's named. We could tell you all about the Paddock family. We could tell you, we've got that history. Let's watch to hear what comes out. from the, and some, by the way, some of that doesn't make sense. I'll just flat out tell you, you look at a series of documents that we have access to, for example, as investigators, you subscribe to, for example, as licensed investigators, you have access to once I have been vetted, I'm given access to a proprietary database that you don't find on the internet. For example, you can't sign up. It's not like Intellius or these other services on the internet where you can get people's information. This is deep stuff. It's not LexisNexis or anything like that. These are databases that are restricted to law enforcement investigators. But my analysis of what I've seen doesn't make sense. There are a few bumps here and there, a few bumps on the information that tell me that there's just something not right with this. And isn't it interesting, and we're going to be talking about this in a larger sense as well, isn't it interesting, Joe, that many people look at this and say, you know what, there's no rhyme or reason for this. And how many times have we heard that?
Yeah, no, a few things. Now, we just got an email from Maureen H. I want to thank you. I did not get a chance to listen to Michael Savage today. Of all the radio shows out there, he's somebody that I do like to listen to on a regular basis. But she sends this to us. She says, Mr. Hagman, just wanted to pass on some info for whatever it may be worth. Was listening to Michael Savage today. A caller who was a veteran said he lived very near Mr. Paddock for many months. Found him to be very nice. They had beers together. There was never any talk or mention of any guns he had. The caller suggested, since the event seemed so out of character, maybe someone else in the hotel room at the time killed Paddock, making it look like Paddock had done it. I realize there are countless details coming in right now.
That's right.
So just wanted to pass this along.
And that's not the first time I heard that.
Right. And then she goes on to say,
obviously,
I also sent this to Steve Quayle and others. You both are amazing investigators. Thank you. So thank you, Maureen. I've heard theories as well. And we have a lot of emails. I mean, talk about a heavy email day. A lot of people not only posting stories. We have one listener of the show who just sent an email saying that her family or one of her friends was present at the concert. He and his wife, they survived. They weren't hurt. They are Christians. And if we wanted to have them on the show, she offered contact info for them.
Actually, we received a number of people who were there and eyewitness to the event.
Yes, and I mean, it's a big event. I never heard of it before, but
yeah,
30,000 people attended roughly over a 3-day period.
Friday,
Saturday, Sunday,
and this is something we're going to be following up on, depending on the merits of the information. The one thing that we've had enough of is the description of the carnage there. We understand that.
Yeah.
I think we need to get into the facts of this, and it's interesting from that the military officer who said that, hey, you know, this guy, he had beers with him, all right? So no indication of any religious or political ideology or motivation, and this rings true to a number of findings on the proprietary side that I found. And you're going to find, too, if you look, Joe, I don't know if you've seen this or not, you're going to see pictures out there or video out there. In fact, there's one where, you know, this guy worked for Lockheed Martin, right? NASA, Lockheed Martin.
He did work for NASA, the shooter?
Or Lockheed Martin as a subcontractor for NASA.
Okay, because there was
separated.
I saw a video where somebody points out him being at an anti-Trump rally in August wearing a pink NASA shirt. Okay, go ahead.
All right, and I've seen that, too. And the reason I bring this up is, again, can you say for sure that's him? No.
No.
It's interesting, however, that the shirt is reflective of his subcontractor's position. But again, this is all information that before we come out and say, okay, here's our findings, you've got to be very careful. Being first out is meaningless if you're not correct. And again, I think everyone wants the accurate information over the being the first one out with this, and it kills me when I see people attempting to fall all over themselves to get the first bit of information out. As a matter of fact, there's another Stephen Paddock that I'm probably having a bad day, because the first dot with the name got the wrong person. Yeah. How would you like to be that person?
Yeah, that would be tough. That's just like Sandy Hook with the brother, Adam Lanza. They first said it was his brother who did the shooting. Come to find out his brother was alive attending college in New York City. And they came out and identified the wrong person publicly in that event, too. And just as, you know, we look back here, we only got a minute before the break, and then we're going to bring Keith Hansen on. We mentioned the Orlando Pulse nightclub shooting, the Omar Mateen, who had Muslim affiliation. The Scott Stevens, Scalise shooting. I forget who the shooter was, but if you remember, he was an older white man, but he had a history of violence, even with guns, discharging a weapon in a domestic dispute with his daughter, and had a history of violence in other instances with his family as well. We're not seeing that in this case. And again, without continuing to speculate on who, what, why, where, when, we're going to have to wait to see what facts do come out. Me personally, I'm very pessimistic that we'll ever find out the truth of a lot of these events that we see happen.
From the corporate media.
Oh, absolutely.
I guarantee you, we are working to uncover the information you're not going to hear elsewhere. Go ahead.
We will be right back after this short break, folks, with Keith Hansen, radio show host, and so much more. And he will be joining us for the next segment, so don't go anywhere. You're listening to this Monday edition of the Hagmann Report. Stay tuned.
Visit HagmannReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back. In a thrilling series of novels, T.C. Joseph takes us into the lives of three families who struggle to maintain normal lives in a world where conspiracy theory and Bible prophecy collide. T.C. Joseph's viewpoint of alternative history and understanding of prophetic events will change your view of the world and the events on our horizon. Kirkus Review states, readers of end times fiction will be hard-pressed to find it done more intriguingly than this. Extremely readable and fast-paced, Blue Wink Reviews boldly states, fans of Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series and Tom Perata's The Leftovers will find this thought-provoking series absolutely riveting. Order your copies of T.C. Joseph's This Generation series from Amazon.com. Book 1, Precipice. Book 2, Pentecost. And Book 3, Penance.
Uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable for the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA. Go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagmann. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagmann takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmannandHagmann.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
We'll be right back.
Please be careful who you listen to, what you read, and what you believe when you read it. That's our mantra. And we deal in facts at this point. We must deal in facts, especially given the seriousness of the time. The time in which we live, the era, everything has changed. And again, you entrust us with that information. And if it seems like we are not fast and furious with the information, that's for a reason. I think it's more important to be correct than first. And again, the speculation is fine. We can talk about this. We can have a conversation about what's going on. But we have to look at the bigger picture, I believe. And what's the bigger picture here? Obviously, and as I mentioned this morning, you know, you take God out of the equation. And this drives the atheistic communist crazy. Take God out of the equation. It changes the equation completely. And that's what we've seen happen over the last quarter of a century or longer, 50 years. And it's unfortunate, but that's a fact. The morality is ripped to shreds. And of course, we've got lawlessness. And then you've got the politicians making political hay out of this situation. The silencer, bill, of course. You know, Hillary Clinton making reference to that. Of course, it's got nothing to do with this. You're gonna see conservatives, small C conservatives, run like hell away from the situation and back away from bills that should be passed. But the one thing is, at the end of the day, I believe the end of the story here, or the end of what the intent here, or what's going to happen regardless of the intent of the individual, whether or not it was Paddock alone, Paddock with someone else, or not even Paddock, who knows? The intent, I believe, is the exploitation of this and other events we have yet to see. And that is the shredding of our Constitution, our civil liberties, our rights, and of course our ability to own firearms. And of course, once you take the Second Amendment away, all the other amendments don't mean a doggone thing. First Amendment is gone. And we were seeing the erosion of the First Amendment. I would urge everyone to look bigger, to think bigger, because the plans are much bigger. We're going to have Keith Hansen coming on momentarily, federal firearms instructor. And you know, he's dubbed the voice of common sense conservatism in New Hampshire and Vermont and syndicated elsewhere. Keith is the host of New England's Heritage FM morning talk show, First Look, and the Keith Hansen Show on Fox News affiliates, 99.7 FM, WNTK, and 98.9 FM and 1490 AM, WUVR. Keith is an active entrepreneur and a business owner, a professional trainer in a wide variety of subjects and disciplines, certified life coach, and avid public speaker. By the way, he's a talented chef too. And he is, he was the one who actually taught us, Joe and I, and another individual who's since passed on, the handling of firearms and all about firearms. So, it is with distinct honor and a pleasure that we have to talk about this situation, Keith Hansen. Keith, welcome to the program tonight.
Doug, great to talk to you again. It's been quite a while, actually.
I know. And you've just been growing and growing. What do you do, like 25 hours of radio a day?
4 hours a day now, so 20 hours a week.
20 yeah. hours a week. It's amazing.
Yeah, pretty busy.
Yeah, you are. Well, let's open it up, Keith. What's your assessment as to what happened here, what we saw? What's going on?
Well, I think, I don't think there's anybody out there that wouldn't agree with me that the world is just, I mean, it's going upside down right now. I think one of the biggest problems right now is that there's not a lot of information that's available out there. There's still a lot of speculation and conjecture. The most recent report from the Clark County Sheriff's Department, 59 dead, 527 injured. I mean, that's just 527 injured and 59 dead. It's just unfathomable numbers. It's so hard to wrap your head around that type of carnage, and how one person can be responsible for that. It's just mind-boggling. And you know, there's not a lot that's known about this guy. This is what's really perplexing about this case. Usually when there's a mass shooting, that, you know, immediately there's, you know, everybody and their brother in the media is now searching for information. They're doing background checks. They're doing criminal background checks. They're scouring social media for anything. There's really not a lot of information about this guy. Even his social media profile is very limited. So there's not a lot of information that's available. And then, of course, because it's an ongoing active investigation, you've got the law enforcement agencies, federal, state, local agencies that are not releasing information, again, because it is an ongoing investigation. And so that just kind of fuels the speculation about, you know, who is this guy and what was his motivation to do what he did.
Very true, Keith. And that's right on the money. The lack of actual information fuels speculation. And we see that speculation, especially with the internet and all the different forums and comment sections, runs rampant all the time. And this is how, you know, stories get away.
Well, you know, Keith, you said something. Now, you've been involved in law enforcement. You know that there are proprietary databases out there not available to the public. I access one of those databases, actually two of them. For background on this gentleman, I've got that background information, comparing it to what's coming out in real life. And you're right. There's some holes here that, I gotta tell you, it makes me wonder what the real story is for motive and who is this guy? You know.
Well, you know, and there's, you know, there's stories now about whether or not he's, you know, his brother comes out and says he's a multimillionaire real estate developer. You know, there have been unconfirmed sources coming out of Las Vegas saying that, he had placed some pretty significant wagers over the past couple of days, whether or not he won or lost. They're unable to tell. The bottom line is that this guy, since the 20th of September, has been holed up in this, this two-room suite on the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Bay Resort and Hotel in downtown Las Vegas, and he was very methodically planning this out. There's no question about it. And you know, with the number of firearms that he had, the law enforcement sources right now are putting it at 17 inside of the room, including a variety of calibers. That at least one of those firearms was in the words of the reporting individual, modified to be a fully automatic. You know, whether or not that was, most likely it was illegally modified. I mean, of course, there's step-by-step instructions that you can find on the internet, on YouTube, things like that. So whether or not he did it or whether somebody else did it for him, you know, whether it was the use of perhaps one of those bump fire stocks that allows the natural recoil of a rifle to function in a quasi fully automatic fashion. You know, a lot of this information still is not known at this point in time. What his motivations were, whether or not he was, you know, he was motivated by political rhetoric. You know, of course, ISIS coming out and saying not once but twice that they were claiming responsibility for him. You know, so again, I don't want to say a lot of misinformation, but there's just a lot of lack of information right now that. You know, is normally by this time we would have known a lot more about the shooter. I mean, that's typically what happens as the investigation progresses. You know, thinking about the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando, within 12 hours, I mean, we pretty much knew everything about the individuals, and I'm not about to mention names just because I'm of the belief that we don't give them the honor and the dignity, of mentioning their names. So, but the Orlando Pulse nightclub shooter, I mean, we know pretty much everything about him. Within 12 hours of the scene being cleared.
Yeah, no, you're right. And Keith, I want to ask you this, you know, about the logistics. You mentioned, I think you said 17 weapons in the room, which obviously...
Just to be clear, I saw reports of 10.
Yep.
I saw reports 13. Of 19.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, all throughout the night, that number changed dramatically. But go ahead. Go ahead. Sure.
Well, my question is, you being a firearms expert, and we'll say this man was planning this out for, you know, a long period of time, whether it's days, weeks, or months. Would there be, is the 32nd floor, you know, 300 plus feet above, yards? Is that what you said, Dan? 300 yards?
Well, it's 363.9 yards. From the from that floor to the closest that we know. And Keith, I was able to verify this for one law enforcement officer that this I can say. It was a ballistics show that was 363.9 or 7. I'm not sure which. I don't have the note in front of me here. From the window to the closest victim.
So, in essence, 3.5 football fields.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, my question would be, wouldn't there be, I mean, doesn't that seem a little extreme as far as distance for what he was trying to accomplish, if he was trying to accomplish, you know, just a mass kill type scenario?
No, I think it's a pretty realistic distance, and given the fact that he wasn't, we're not talking about precision rifle work here. We're talking about a crowd of, I mean, there were estimates that there were 30,000 people in attendance at that concert. So, I mean, really, it's, you know, I've heard the expression more than once, and it's crude, but it certainly, I think, is an effective metaphor. It's like shooting fish in a barrel, where you're not using any type of precision. It's just you're spraying, you're dumping tremendous amounts of ammunition in one general direction. And just given the density of people, basically per square meter, when you look at it in terms of crowd control, you know, you're pretty much guaranteed to hit somebody. And I think that's why the casualty count was as high as it was. Not to mention that just the tactical advantage from shooting from an elevated position like that, you know, I hate to give a dirtbag credit, but he really did have every tactical advantage given that height.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that height was calculated extremely with extreme precision.
Now, you know, and when you look at the history of active shooter events in this country, typically it's a person, it's an armed gunman who is walking into a densely populated area. I mean, and let's establish, I mean, what is an active shooter? We have shootings in this country every day. You know, somebody walks in. We had up in New Hampshire here, we had what was originally relayed as an active shooter at Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center. The report came in that there was an active shooter. Individual walks in, 12:15 in the afternoon, checks into the security station, signs in, and then goes upstairs to the fourth floor to the intensive care unit, pulls out a handgun, and executes his mother as she's laying in a bed in the intensive care unit. Now, that was not an active shooter situation in the classic definition of the phrase. Now, normally, you know, it really was a domestic violence homicide. What is an active shooter situation? It's a person where it's a situation where an individual is randomly and indiscriminately shooting with no pattern, with no discernible pattern, but the key is with unrestricted access to additional victims. And so when you look at what happens, typically you have the gunman that walks into a densely populated area, whether it's a school, and generally it's a confined area. So it's a school, it's a movie theater, it's a church, it's some other type of densely populated area. And then the gunman pulls out a firearm and then begins shooting. And as time progresses, you start to see a proportionate drop in the number of deaths that are occurring, because as this person is shooting, of course, people are scrambling. This is really a paradigm shift here, because really, with the exception of Charles Whitman at the University of Texas campus and the clock tower, we don't see a lot of situations where you have a gunman that is taking an elevated position like that. We've had a couple, the Discovery Channel hostage standoff that took place back in 2010 in California, but that really wasn't an active shooter situation. It was more of a hostage standoff situation. Eyewitness reports coming out of Las Vegas, it was very confusing, because not only did they not know where the shots were coming from, but because the percussion was echoing off of the, you know, the mirrored glass buildings that were down there, there were preliminary reports of as many as 3 to 5 shooters because of all the echoing. So it was extremely chaotic, and not to mention, too, the shots coming from an elevated position. Many people thought, you know, this was either a pyrotechnics display or a fireworks display that was part of the show, given the fact that this took place during the very last song in the closing night of this music festival.
Interesting. Interesting. From the point of your analysis and the information you provided. By the way, Charles Whitman, and I find this very interesting, when you mentioned him, and I think that a lot, and of course, the Texas shooting, Charles Whitman, it was August 1st of 1966, I believe, right? I could be wrong, but it was August. In fact, the 17th or 18th victim of that shooting died in 2001. from injuries sustained in that murder. But he was that whole scenario was responsible for the creation of what is now known as the SWAT teams. That's your understanding, right? I mean, that's
accurate.
Okay, all right. But yeah, I think that was 28 floors up or from the observatory at Texas University in Austin. But anyway, what you said, I think is a very good analysis from your law enforcement, your investigative perspective. Now, what should we be looking for in the upcoming days and weeks and months ahead here with respect to this incident here? What are you looking for?
Well, I mean, for me personally, I'm looking for, I'd like to see some indication of what the individual's motives were behind this. I don't know if you caught the news report or not. A senior vice president from CBS Broadcasting was actually terminated, because of a social media statement that she put out saying she had no sympathy for the people that were killed in Las Vegas because they were most likely Republicans. You're seeing the politicization of this. You're seeing the divisive rhetoric, along the party lines. To be honest with you, my first thought when I heard about this was, geez, I wonder if this is one of these unhinged Bernie bros, similar to the Stephen Scalise shooting. So I think it's going to be pretty interesting to see as this progresses and as more details are released about what was found in the multiple properties that this individual owned that are either have been searched or in the process of being searched, really trying to get an indication of what's the motivation here. What would lead somebody to do this? Typically when somebody engages in this, they're either looking for revenge, they're looking to make a name for themselves. They're kind of at a point where they feel like there's no other hope in their life. They're going to go out with a bang. They're going to take a bunch of people with them. I would be concerned about copycats, certainly. And I would also be very interested to find out exactly what were the types of weapons that were used, what types of modifications, that had been made to those weapons. Now, of course, everybody talking about automatic firearms, and I think it's important to note that, those are heavily regulated. It is legal for private citizens to possess fully automatic weapons. But that being said, they are heavily regulated by the ATF. So if this was a fully automatic weapon that had been lawfully possessed by the shooter, I would imagine by this point the ATF would have come out and said, that this is an individual that had what are called Class 3 or NFA registered firearms in his name. Now, these typically start at about $15,000 a piece and go up. So I find it highly unlikely that he was using an automatic Class 3 NFA registered firearm that was lawfully purchased. I think probably the path of least resistance would say it was a semi-automatic weapon that had been unlawfully or illegally converted to shoot automatic, or was utilizing an aftermarket type of accessory like a bump stock that would allow him to rapid fire those rounds.
Yeah. And how many rounds do you, I know this calls for speculation, but my goodness, how many rounds do you think were fired downrange on this in this case?
Well, by all estimates that the shooting lasted about 7 minutes. It's entirely possible, given the number of wounded, the number of dead, that he could have expended easily between 700 to 800 rounds in that short period of time.
And there's some weight there to that ammunition, bringing that into a hotel room, and some bulk, of course, right?
Theoretically. Now, the report is that they also found ammonium nitrate in his vehicle.
Oh.
So he had materials in his car. Given the fact that he had been there for 4 days, it's not unlikely that he had the materials stored in his car, the weapons, the ammunition.
Sure.
And then as he got closer to the point where he had decided he was going to perpetrate this act, to start shuttling that information. And I know that the FBI right now, along with members of the Las Vegas Metro Police Department and the Clark County Sheriff's Department, are reviewing the Mandalay Bay surveillance cameras to determine exactly what the methodology was that he used to transition those items from his vehicle or wherever else he happened to be storing those to his room on the 32nd floor.
And you had said something to me that, off air, which I think is important. And by the way, Las Vegas hotels, there is surveillance everywhere. Every square inch of the hotel, you know, with the exception of the private rooms, is under surveillance. So, yeah, but you had said something to me earlier that, that you had information that the, that, that the shooter had set up basically his own surveillance system. Is that
there were reports, whatever? There were reports that there were video cameras that were placed in the hallways close to the elevators. So that way there he was able to see when law enforcement was coming down. And he did what, you know, what a vast majority of active shooters do, which is when they know that they're about to be apprehended, that they self-terminate. And that appears to be exactly what happened there.
Got it. Okay.
Again, I mean, it's speculation based on all of the information, the limited information that, that exists out there. Now, I mean, as the information becomes available, the after action reviews, the after action reports that are going to be filed by the multitude of agencies that, that had a hand in the investigation and the cleanup on this, some of those are going to become available to the public, some of those are going to become available to the media, and then certainly some of those which would not be released to the media or to the public would be available to the training consortiums that, help to modify and adapt the current counterterrorism tactics and active shooter response training protocols for law enforcement, because all of these now become valuable teaching aids. What went right, what went wrong, what needs to be corrected, and what can we do in the event that something like this happens in the future? How can we train officers to better respond to this? And again, you know, most of the time when we're training law enforcement officers in active shooter and counterterrorism tactics, we tend to be looking at it from, again, the terrorist or the active shooter, the active killer. It doesn't have to be an active shooter now. It's, you know, there's knives that are available. There's box trucks that are available. I mean, people are using pretty much whatever they need to do to try to inflict carnage on other people. That being said, I think, you know, we're always training from the protocol that the individual is inside this confined area. They're inside the school or the movie theater or the shopping center or the church, and then the individual begins to kill people using aggressive deadly force. And so how do we mitigate that? And again, this is really a game changer because this is something that we haven't seen a lot of historically. But I mean, think about this from, you know, really from any place where there's a look at the majority of your sporting venues, you know, where you put 30, 40, 50, 60, 70,000 people, inside of a baseball stadium or inside of a football stadium. And oftentimes you have hotels around there. And so what's the likelihood? This is what my concern really is, Doug, is what's the likelihood for a copycat? What's the likelihood that some unhinged person out there is going to go, hey, wow, he did a good job. Now, this isn't my words. I mean, I'm just, you know, hypothetically saying what would be potentially going through the minds of a person who's unhinged. Wow, this person did a really good job. I can do better. And now they're going to go out and try to raise that bar.
Yeah, that's a very, that's a very frightening scenario, Keith. We only have about 2.5 minutes left before the end of the segment.
And Keith is coming back with us and spend some time with us.
Yeah, I hope so. Absolutely. Keith, I want to ask you this. Well, the scenario you described, the copycat or another shooter who decides to take on a large venue of people, what would you recommend to people who find themselves in a situation where there is an active shooter in a situation like this?
You know, it's a really interesting question because we've actually recently just started to deliver armed citizen response to active shooter training programs. You know, I think by and large the standard response protocol is a run, hide, fight. First and foremost, if you have the ability to get away, get away. If you have the ability to run away and you can do so safely, do it. If you have the ability to hide, and to get down. I'm not going to tell a person, you know, if you're armed, if you're carrying a concealed weapon, I'm not going to tell you to pull your gun out and go running towards the threat, because first responders are not going to know who you are. And if they're responding to reports of shots fired and an active killing and they find, you know, Joe Citizen running around with a gun, it's probably not going to end well for that person. They don't know who you are. They just know that you have a firearm. But if you happen to be in a location, if you happen to be armed, lawfully carrying a firearm, and you happen to be in a situation where in that immediate vicinity, you have active killing going on, then you have a decision to make. And I think one of the biggest things, and of course, you know, Doug and Joe, both of you having trained with me, you know how we put an emphasis on precision. Are you going to be effective in that situation, or are you going to create more of a safety concern? That's really up to the individual. I mean, it's a tough call because there is no correct answer, given the fact that the circumstances can be so different from case to case to case. It really is on a case-by-case basis. You really have to know what your competency level is, and then you really have to be able to, as quickly as you can, make an assessment and determine what's going to be the best course of action for myself and my loved ones. Do I run? Do I hide? Or do I fight back? And that's, you know, something that ultimately the individual has to make that choice, and the individual has to live with the consequences of the choices that they've made.
Key, thank you so much for your analysis. How about you tell our audience where and when they can find you and listen to you?
Well, if they'd like to, they can certainly stream me. We're online Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. It's First Look with Keith Hansen from 6 a.m. until 9 a.m., and that's followed by The Keith Hansen Show, which is an hour of national political analysis and commentary. WNTK.com is probably the best place to do it. You can stream it online at WNTK.com. That's Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. until 10 a.m. Eastern Time.
That's where I get mine. I got to tell you, and the flawless pop-up streaming player, flawless. Keith, I want to thank you so much for your expertise, for your analysis. And by the way, thanks for teaching us the proper handling of a firearm. We really appreciate that in precision.
Doug and Joe, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I know it's been a while, but we'll have to do this again. It was fun.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll
thanks,
do it again.
Guys. God bless.
All right.
God bless you too, Keith.
That was Keith Hansen. A man, I'll tell you what, a guy I would trust with his analysis. I would trust his analysis more, over many, 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 many others.
I mean, just think about this. He taught my dad how to use and shoot a gun in under 4 hours. So he's got to be good. Folks, we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Wow. Greenovative. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. What Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right, you need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bang, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greenovative.com. That's greenovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's smoke. Fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com, PreciousTimberProfits.com.